Welcome to Let's Talk Sports.
Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Sports. I am your host, LJ. I hope you are enjoying this on a beautiful day. I am enjoying this on a beautiful Friday. I normally record on Thursday night, sometimes Wednesday, but I'll be honest with you, I wasn't motivated to record last night. I wasn't thinking straight, and so I didn't record. And there was some other stuff going on yesterday. It's my son's birthday. My second son just turned 12 years old, so happy birthday to my son Bryce. And my oldest son's 13. In my office at home, I have monitors that I use when I'm working and stuff like that, or even when I'm doing podcasting, and sometimes I play video games with them. But my daughter, my three-year-old daughter, she broke my monitor. I was brokenhearted. I love that monitor because it made things easy for me, because one of the things that I also do sometimes in my spare time is I code, you know, build websites, stuff like that. And so my oldest son took his money, got together with his grandmother. And if you got kids, you know how it is. Kids can always figure out a way to get some money from their grandparents or get their grandparents to help them to do something when it comes to money. So he got with his grandmother and used his money, and she helped him out. And he bought me a new monitor. So thank you to my oldest son, Junior. And thank you to Missy Gia, my mother-in-law, and his grandmother for helping him, helping him do that for me. I really, really appreciate that. But, you know, off of my family life and on to what y'all came here to hear me talk about, which is sports. Now, I know the NFL is not really going on right now. There's nothing really sports related going on in the NFL. The NBA is not happening either. But teams started reporting to the bubble on July 8th. And some of the players have been posting some funny videos about the food. They're not happy with the food. Some of them, not everybody. There's been a couple of them. Or with the accommodations. And I think I might have said this last week. But it's one of those things where, like, when you're in those kind of circumstances, it's going to be what it's going to be. What you make out of it is what you're going to get out of it. And, of course, you know, like, initially, it's going to be a lot of shock. You know what I'm saying? Initially, it's going to be a lot of shock, because if you're a multimillionaire several times over, you're living in a big mansion, you probably got a chef, or, you know what I'm saying, you can pretty much eat almost whatever you want to eat any day. And then you go to this hotel room that's small, and they feed you in like plastic trays and stuff that you may or may not eat, or they don't cook it the way you like it or whatever. Yeah, that's gonna seem like it's gonna be rough. Now, luckily for some of y'all, you know what I'm saying, like, if you play for Orlando, the Washington Wizards, especially the Washington Wizards. Your stay in Orlando will be very short. You hear me? Yeah, so you ain't even got to worry about it for that long. Cause soon as the playoffs where Washington, you probably not even gonna make the playoffs. And Orlando and Brooklyn. Well, Brooklyn more so than Orlando, but Brooklyn, you'll be out in the first round. You're gonna get swept. You're gonna get swept like a tumbleweed in the West Texas windstorm. Yes, sir, you're going to get swept. So you ain't got to worry about it too long, don't you? Matter of fact, the player for Washington and all that, you ain't need to unpack your bag, dog. Don't even unpack your bag. By the time you unpack them, it'd be time for you to go on back to the crib and go on quarantine somewhere else. You hear me? So, you know, don't even worry about it. But everybody, you know, they locking in the team slowly but surely, pouring into Orlando. And it's going to be fun watching the NBA back. I mean, they got the TBT, the basketball tournament has been on, and it's been pretty cool to watch that, you know, seeing some live basketball and not watching replays and stuff like that. That's been fun to watch, but, you know, it'll be good to see the creme de la creme of basketball players in the world get back on the court and do their thing. I think there was some I don't want to say unexpected consequences of trying to come back during the middle of the pandemic. You know, a lot of players decided they weren't going to play. I don't think the NBA was expecting some of the things that happened in terms of like Brooklyn. Like they had, I think, Tayshaun Prince, Spencer Dinwiddie, Wilson Chandler, DeAndre Jordan. None of them are going. One of them, I think two of them, Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan, I think both tested positive for the coronavirus. And I think Tayshaun Prince was the same way. I don't think the NBA expected a team to basically lose, like, that's like three key guys that aren't going. And then Bradley Beal, he's not playing. I think he's going, but he's not playing. It's something about a shoulder injury. I'm not rolling with that one. I mean, it sounds good to say, you know, it's better to say, well, I shouldn't say it's better to say, but I guess you just want to say, oh, I have a shoulder injury, so I can't play. But I ain't heard nothing about no shoulder injury all this damn time. Nothing about a shoulder injury. Then just all of a sudden, oh, yeah, he got a shoulder injury. He can't play. But whatever. So he ain't playing. So it's going to be ugly in the Eastern Conference. I mean, really, they'd be better off. Hell, probably combining those teams and just letting them play against Milwaukee in the first round and go and get swept so we can move on. I don't know. But New Jersey, they signed Jamal Crawford. And people are like, oh, yeah, we got to get you. I'm like, fam, Jamal Crawford is 40 years old. There's a reason he's not in the NBA. He hadn't been in the NBA all season. It's not because he can't play. And they're like, oh, his last game, he scored 50. Okay, Tony Dumas scored 50 in the NBA. I mean, at a certain point in time, a 40-year-old guy is not going to be able to go out and play 35 minutes and get 20-plus points on a regular basis. He might can do it occasionally, you know, have a good night occasionally, but he's not going to be able to do it consistently in the NBA. So, though I can tell you right now, I would imagine any Washington Wizards, it's the Washington Wizards especially. They're already bad anyways, and it's just going to be worse without Bradley Beal. They're probably going to be worse to see than New Jersey Nets. Brooklyn Nets, man. They're going to be worse to see than the Brooklyn Nets. But anyways, I don't really want to talk about the NBA. I don't really want to talk about the NBA because ain't nothing going on up there. It's just a bunch of little gossip stuff. You know what I'm saying? College sports. The Ivy League. Whoever thought I would be talking about the Ivy League on here? The Ivy League has decided to move football. And I believe all fall sports, football for sure, to the spring. And I think, I don't know if it's a good idea or not. I think at the Ivy League level, I can't get anything out today. They're moving all of their fall sports to the spring is what I'm trying to say, including football. Not a bad idea in terms of if you've been listening to any other experts related to the coronavirus and, you know, kind of thinking that maybe there's going to be some sort of vaccine in place by early 2020 or as early as January 2021, you know, it makes a little bit of sense. But, you know, for Ivy League schools, sports really, I don't want to say they don't matter, but in terms of the university operating and what those universities represent in terms of when people think of them, if the Ivy League schools didn't play sports, only people who went to Ivy League schools would care. I mean, seriously, I'm sure they would lose some money, obviously, but it doesn't affect their bottom line in terms of probably costing a lot of people their jobs. Whereas, say, you go to a Big Ten conference school and they cancel all the, or, you know, they move everything from the all their fall sports to the spring. Well, that, you know, that becomes a huge deal, you know, in terms of maybe some people potentially losing their jobs and, you know, just booking and in terms of like using university space and stuff like that. But that's the Ivy League. Like I said, it ain't really affecting nothing. But what's happening, well, the Big Ten officially announced that they're only going to play conference games. I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, I understand why, you know, they're trying to limit the travel and stuff like that. But I was reading an article in the newspaper today, and something interesting came up in it. And the guy who wrote it, Greg Doyle, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He writes for the Indianapolis Star. He's a columnist. He was talking about how when these professional football teams, when a Power Five conference programs start canceling games in terms of saying, "Hey, we're only going to play conference games," people, you tend to only think, okay, well, we're still going to have some football. They're going to lose some games. But what people forget and don't think about are the smaller universities that need those games for their budgets to survive. You know, like one of the examples he used was like Ball State. But just think about any school, you know, that Ohio State playing. You're like, why is Ohio State playing Bowling Green? Or why is Ohio State playing Appalachian State? Stuff like that, you know, the bigger schools end up paying these smaller schools to play them. You know, a smaller school, Ball State or whatever, they could make upwards of $1 million from going for playing against Ohio State and a Michigan or an Alabama or something like that. You know, it brings in a lot of money for those institutions. And so the guy was making a good point, like, you know, some of these institutions are going to, you know, It works for the Big Ten, you know, but it's going to really, really hurt. It's probably going to cost some people their jobs potentially at some of these smaller universities that depend on these one and two games a year against these larger schools that, you know, essentially the chances of them winning those games is not very high, but it's a huge payday for the school and it allows the school to function. You know, because right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you like it or not, or whether you want to admit it or not, at a lot of schools, not every school, but at quite a few schools at the Division I level, and probably even Division II, a lot of the money for those programs across the athletic program is made through the football program. And if you don't understand what I mean by that, meaning like, maybe soccer, baseball, maybe fucking rowing, maybe volleyball. I don't know. Just some other sports that don't get the television exposure. They don't draw the size of crowds and stuff like that. And so they're not bringing in the money in order for that program to exist at that university. The football program has to bring in a ton of money. And then, you know, so they don't take in and say, oh, this is football money, so we're just going to use it for football. No, the athletic program takes that money and it becomes part of the athletic budget. And, you know, whoever oversees the athletic budget does what they do with it, right? So it'll be interesting to see how if other Power Five conferences follow the same footsteps as the Big Ten did, how it will affect smaller universities that make large sums of money by playing these larger schools or these more dominant schools in football, how it will affect their athletic departments, and will they start having to cancel games, or just, you know, kind of what that fallout will be. I'm interested to see. And, you know, the other thing I'm interested to see is, will more schools consider moving all of their fall sports to the spring like the Ivy League did. Now, I know I was saying earlier that, you know, it may not be feasible for at the college level for the Power Five schools, just because, you know, they have maybe some other sports that kind of overlap and stuff like that. So it may not be as easy for them to do as maybe an Ivy League school. And also because of like television contracts and all of that, I'm not sure how that stuff is affected. But I wonder if more programs, or I guess it would have to be a conference thing, would if they'll consider doing that, and what, you know, the overall implications will be of that. I haven't thought a ton about it, but I mean, I could potentially see it work. I could potentially see it work. I mean, I think the problem that schools would have is like you obviously would still probably lose some revenue, because in order to make it work, you probably would have to, you know, have maybe a football game and a basketball game going on the same weekend, or, you know, something like that. You'd have to squeeze a lot of games, a lot of travel and stuff like that into a pretty small window, you know, unless the NCAA would have let sports that would traditionally, you know, maybe let some things drag out a little bit further into the summer, maybe after some of the semesters have ended. But even still, you know, I don't love the idea of moving fall sports to spring. But I do love the idea of trying to figure out a way, especially for these kids that are seniors, to be able to play their last year, because we don't want to get into, I would think the NCAA and even colleges would not want to get into the, hey, Joe Blow is supposed to, he's a senior, or she's a senior, is graduating this year, but their sport got canceled, or maybe they're supposed to play six games, but they play two, and because of the coronavirus, the other four got canceled. Do we give them another year of eligibility? You know, go through the whole eligibility thing all over again, you know, next spring, early summertime, trying to figure out whether those kids that were seniors would be eligible to come back to play another year. And the other thing that goes into that would be financing, et cetera, et cetera. But so I think it'd be best if you could just play them in the fall as you normally would. And, you know, if they do, you can probably expect cancellations. I mean, I would assume that's going to happen. But playing in the spring is not ideal to me, and not the first thing that would come to mind. Now, speaking of college sports, Maker McCour, and gosh, I hope I'm saying his name right. He was, depending on which recruiting service you went to, he was either the number 16 or number 17 recruit. We'll just say he's a five-star recruit. He's like 7 foot long wingspan. I've never seen him play. I've seen highlights, so I'm not going to tell you how talented or a lack of talent, or how talented or not talented he is, because I'd be lying if I tried to give you an assessment of his play when I haven't seen him play. I've only seen highlights. Anyways, he became the first rank. Was it the rank? Oh, man, I lost my notes. The first five-star recruit in like 20 years or something like that, in a really long time, to commit to play a sport at a HBCU, historically black college university, because you say HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities. Anyways, but so he committed to Howard University, which I would say is not known for the sports. Howard University is more so, when I think of Howard University, I think of academics. They have a great, 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 great academic program. They've had a lot of well-known blacks come through that program, including Thurgood Marshall went to school there. Kamala Harris, who was running for president for a time, Puff Daddy went there. And the Black Panther who went there, Anthony Anderson went there. Just, you know, a few famous blacks that you can that would probably come to the mind, or most people have heard of, regardless of whether you follow their careers and whatever they do or not. You know, so Howard is really known as a very prestigious academic university, not really athletic. Doesn't matter which sport it is, right? So, you know, some of the things that he said. Now, he did say that he started considering Howard, I think, in the 2017-2018 season. Yeah. So it didn't start with the Black Lives Matter or with the movement that has been going on in the last month and a half or so. But from reading the article that he had with the Undefeated, it sounded like that was kind of what pushed him over the top in terms of deciding to go to an HBCU over the likes of, I believe he had offers from UCLA, Kentucky, you know, just some of the college blue bloods and some of the, you know, the colleges that are like at the top of the at the top of the heap in college basketball on the boys side of the boys side of the house, year in and year out. And so this brings me to an interesting thought. It's an interesting time because largely from what I can understand, from what I gather from reading this, he chose to go here because of the movement. Like that pushed him over the top to go to Howard as opposed to going to a different university, you know. Now I'm going to be, if I sound like I'm skirting the issue a little bit, I'm not. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to be careful as I don't want to criticize a teenager. And even though I believe Maker may be 19. Yeah. Okay. He is 19, but he's still a teenager. He's a kid to me, right? No disrespect to him, but to me, he's a kid. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to take shots or anything like that or make it seem like I am attacking a teenager. While I do applaud him for making his decision, you know, because it sounds like that's something he wanted to do or something he was considering. And, you know, he says he wants to set a, you know, kind of be a leader, I guess, if you will. I think that's the word that he used in the article. And, you know, maybe help set a trend of more black players going to more of the top black athletes going to HBCUs. And if you know anything about sports or professionally, then, you know, before colleges were integrated, most of the black players that played professionally, they came from HBCUs. You go look in the NFL Hall of Fame, a lot of those guys from way back in the day, Jerry Rice, you know, even before that, you know, it kind of goes back before their time, you know, even actually a lot further back than their time. But, you know, you'll see that those guys went to HBCUs. Then when universities started to get integrated, then more and more black athletes, the top black athletes anyway, started to go to what people would call predominantly white institutions, right? So I want to be clear on my stance on this. My stance on this is that as an athlete, and you can take athlete out of it. I know we're talking sports, but you can take athlete out of it. And this is what I would tell my kids. I have four kids. This is what I would tell my kids. And I'm black, by the way, if you don't know. I'm black. I have a master's degree. So I got my undergraduate from Texas Tech and my master's at the University of North Texas, you know, two universities that people would probably consider, that we would be considered predominantly white institutions or white universities, whatever you want to call it, right? And so if I were, once my kids get to that point to where they're ready to go to college, what I would tell my kids is, you got to figure out what's best for you, right? What's best for you? And I know that, you know, people are saying, well, you know, he's trying to do the movement and all that. And I'm not knocking that, but I'm just telling you what I would tell my kids, do what's best for you, right? Because what you don't want to do is, get so caught up in the movement that you make a decision that does not allow you to maximize your potential. And that's whether it's as a student or whether it is as an athlete. And what I mean by that is, right, so we'll use something that, you know, because everybody doesn't play sports and everybody doesn't understand sports that well. But most people understand, like, non-sports jobs, right? It'd be the same as if I wanted to go to Harvard Law School versus, let's say, it doesn't matter which other law school, but a law school that does not have the prestige and the reputation academically that Harvard Law School does, right? Now, it would make more sense for me to go, if I had the opportunity to get in Harvard Law School, it would make more sense for me to go there, just pure academics. But there may be certain other things that would not make me a good candidate or a good fit, even if I were accepted to that school, for me to go there, right? And if that's the case, then I would go somewhere else or to a different university. But if I wanted to be a lawyer, it would make sense for me to try to get into the best law school that I possibly can. And again, I'm not saying that you cannot get to the pros from an HBCU. And I'm not even saying that kids should not go to HBCUs. What I'm saying is that as a parent, as a coach, when you're advising these kids, to me, what you should be advising them on is what do you want to do with your life and what situation works best for you to accomplish that. Now, looking at it right now, if you said, hey, LJ, if one of your kids got a scholarship to an HBCU, or they were a really good basketball player or football player, and they got offered to an HBCU, but they also got offered, let's just take basketball, for example, since I'm a basketball guy. But they also got offered by, say, like a Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, or Indiana University. Would you tell them to go to an HBCU? And I'm going to tell you this. I would look my son in the eye, or it could be my daughter. And I'm going to say, listen, what do you want to do with your life? If you want to be a professional basketball player, your best interest is probably to go to one of those other universities, not an HBCU. But also then again, too, you know, you'd have to go into each program and kind of evaluate them and see, because at the end of the day, even though those other universities may be more high profile, HBCU might be the perfect place for one of my kids or for any kid to thrive both academically and athletically. So I just feel like you gotta evaluate on what's best for you and for each individual kid, and don't tell these kids to just say, "Hey, you should go to HBCU because you're black." Because I'm gonna keep it 100 with you, and it's gonna ruffle some of y'all feathers, but I don't really even care. It's gonna ruffle some of y'all feathers, and I love it, right? This is why people are telling these kids to go to HBCUs, because a lot of black people that went to some of these people didn't even go to HBCUs, right? But they don't like the fact that predominantly white institutions are making money or becoming, they're making money on the backs of black athletes. And one, the athletes are not getting compensated, but that's, you know, that is kind of outside the purview of a lot of these universities, because the NCAA has control over that. But really, you know, they're putting millions of dollars in these coaches' pockets. They're propping up a lot of these athletic departments, you know, allowing these other athletic, these other sports in programs to be able to be played, for lack of a better way to say it, just because of the money that basketball and football are bringing in, right? And if we being all the way honest with ourselves, the people who are pushing these young black men to go to HBCUs, all they're telling you is, in my opinion, is they're saying, hey, instead of letting white people use you or letting these predominantly white institutions get rich off of your skills, just do it at a black institution. Let them get rich off of you. It's no different. It is absolutely no different. Because you're not going to get anything special by going to an HBCU over a predominantly white institution. You're not. There is no like special degree or anything like that you get. It's just they want you to give the money. They want to allow black universities to be able to use you instead of letting what they feel like instead of letting the black athlete be what they consider to be used by white institutions. Now, I would argue that if you don't think white institutions should use them and they not getting compensated, that you should feel the same way about black institutions being able to use them and not be compensated. You know, my mama always told me two wrongs don't make a right. And just because they go into a black institution does not mean that it becomes right for them to be used just for their athletic abilities. So, you know, so just consider that. You know what I'm saying? Just consider it. And that's just being all the way honest. That's why they want black kids. That's why they want these black athletes to go to HBCUs, right? And again, like I'm saying this again and again and again. I'm not saying that kids should not go to HBCUs. I am specifically saying that parents, adults who are with these kids, you should be telling these kids, you need to figure out what is the best situation for you to maximize your potential in whatever it is you want to do, whether it's be an athlete, whether you want to be a judge, a lawyer, a doctor, whatever it is, and whatever it may be. And then you attack it from that manner in determining where you want to go to college. Now, moving on from Maker Maker. And by the way, I wish that young man, Maker, I said his name wrong totally when I was talking about that. Moving on from him. And by the way, like I was saying, I wish that young man nothing but the best. Unique in terms of being able to move and shoot the ball. And he's got, obviously, he's like 6'11", 7 foot. He's got great wingspan just from the highlights I've seen. I hope he is wildly successful at Howard University. Howard University hadn't made the tournament, the NCAA tournament, in 30 years. So hopefully, you know, he can take Howard University to the tournament and then come out and be a lottery pick and be great in the NBA. So I wish nothing but the best for that young man, and nothing but the best for Howard University. And, you know, hopefully it works out well. It works out well for the athlete and for the university. But I want to move on now from college sports, even though this kind of segues right from college into high school, because Maker is going from high school to the college level to high school. But we're going to stick at the high school level. We're going to go from college sports to the high school level. My favorite. I love high school sports. Now, with COVID-19 happening, depending on what state you live in, some spring sports totally lost this season of sports. Baseball, I think Iowa plays their baseball in the summer, so they don't really count. But most states, they play all of their sports during the school year. And you may have something that starts during the school year, but maybe it drags on for like a week or two afterwards. But so most states they've kind of gotten back into the last month or so, maybe not even that long of being able to do summer workouts and stuff at the high school level. And the state that I live in, recently one of the schools, actually I just saw the newspaper today, they had a kid that tested positive for COVID-19. And so I was reading on a message board on a Facebook group where somebody was saying that, you know, they think they should just cancel sports for the fall because they don't think that it makes sense to start and stop, which is, you know, for the most part, you could probably say that's inevitable. And I would say it's inevitable just because a lot of people just don't want to listen. And I'm not even talking about the kids. I'm talking about adults. A lot of adults don't want to listen. People don't want to wear a mask. They don't want to social distance, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think it's inevitable that if you play a fall sport, there's going to be teams that have kids that test positive for COVID-19. It just is what it is. It's not a fact, but it's kind of like, you know, almost a fact. It's almost a certainty, right? So what should happen with high school sports? Now, I talked earlier about the Ivy League moving their fall sports to the spring. And I saw that somebody was saying, why don't they just move high school sports to spring? And it sounds like a good idea. It's one of those things where when I was in the Army, we used to say it briefs well. It don't make sense, but it briefs well. And the reason I say it doesn't really make sense, and you would be punishing high school athletes if you did it. Punishing may not be the right word. You would probably have a negative impact on a decent amount of high school athletes and even just high schools in general, because think about this, right? And if you're not into high school sports, which most people aren't, just because most people tend to follow high school sports when they have a family member, whether it's their child or somebody like that, that's playing high school sports, and then they may not even follow it. They just may go to that particular kid's game. I am a high school sports guy. I coach high school sports. But anywho, a lot of schools, though, regardless of the size, and I'm talking from the biggest schools in your state to the smaller schools in your state, in particular the smaller schools, mid-sized to smaller schools, a lot of schools have kids who play multiple sports, right? And obviously, you know, most of the time when you play multiple sports, they usually, the seasons don't overlap. Or there's like some overlap, but it's usually like, hey, if your team, like for example, probably in every state or most states, football and basketball overlap, right? You have football players that go from playing football to basketball. And I think volleyball is like that too, but I don't know what sport comes out. Volleyball and basketball in Texas anyways. So you do have sports that overlap. But think about it, if you took all the fall sports, which I have no idea what all sports are played in the fall. I do know like football is one, soccer is one, I think tennis is one. I don't know anything about tennis. Basketball is not a fall sport. However, basketball does start in some states in October. But basketball is considered a winter sport. But anyways, you have a lot of those kids who play multiple sports, right? So that's the biggest obstacle I see to trying to push all the sports to the spring or the fall. Take all the fall sports and put them into the spring. The other thing is, what do you do about sports that start during the wintertime or that are considered winter sports, but would start, you know, like right in the middle of flu season? Because I would argue that if a fall sport starts in August, meaning they, you know, depending on what sport it is, you know, they may start playing actual games, but for sure they'll start practicing in August. I would argue that based on what we've heard from experts, the winter sports would be in just as much potential danger as the fall sports. I mean, with the exception of the fall sports, we have it, the number of cases is actively on the rise now. And when it comes to the winter sports, it's kind of a preemptive strike. Like, hey, you know, we think it's going to come back around this time, so let's just go ahead on it, as opposed to having a start stop. Let's just move it, you know, push the season back to start later. All right. But I don't think it could be. I'm not going to say it can't be done. I'm going to say it'd be very difficult. It could be very, very difficult. It would be very, very difficult. And it would cause a lot of kids to miss out on sports. I'm just going to, and it may even cause schools to not be able to field certain teams, right? Because you may go to a smaller school, a 1A, 2A school, or whatever the smallest level, couple of levels are in your school, where, you know, half of the basketball team may play football, or three quarters of the basketball team may play football. And so they can't start till the football season is over. And I know some of you are saying, well, how do they normally do it? You know, if you're not playing football, I mean, if you're playing football during basketball season, how do they field a team anyways? Well, that's what we call scheduling, right? That's what we call scheduling. Teams that have that, where a good percentage of their players play football, a lot of times they may start practicing with players who don't play football, who don't play fall sports, and then they may not have games until later. So they may practice a little bit longer, and their schedule may be heavier at a later point when they expect to have a full squad. But I wonder if high school sports will. If you asked me this 2 months ago, I would say there's no way they're not going to have high school sports. There's no way. Same thing I would have said about college sports. There's no way they're not going to have college sports. In particular, I was specifically saying this about college sports and football in particular, because the amount of money that sport brings in for most universities, and how most universities' budgets are set up and are able to function properly because of the funds that football brings in. And you don't even have to be like an Ohio State or a Michigan or an Alabama. You would be surprised what other universities that you don't think of as being very good, what they bring into the school financially from their football programs, just because they are big universities. So it's a little bit different. I don't want to stop and start. I'm going to be honest. I don't want to stop and start, but I also don't want to see sports pushed to the fall. Excuse me, fall sports pushed to the winter time. I don't know. I don't have a great answer for you right now, to be quite honest with you. I really don't. I don't have a great answer. I don't know what the right answer is, and I would have to do a ton more research, because I do know that there's coaches out there that are nervous about what's going on right now. in terms of bringing these kids back and knowing that, you know, you may be here for a week or you may be here for two days and then you got shut down for 2 weeks. And then, you know, on top of that is if I have a player who comes to practice, test positive, then I'm assuming that everybody who is there has to quarantine for 2 weeks, or at least everybody who was working out in the group with that player has to quarantine for 2 weeks. Well, then what's the return to play policy, right? As far as, okay, you may say, okay, yeah, you got to, you know, maybe you got to come back with a negative test before we can, you know, we'll let you back to practice. But I'm talking in terms of like getting that kid acclimated to actually play football. And the reason why I'm talking about football so much is because the largest group of kids that are going to be playing sports in the fall are going to be playing football. And I'm not knocking any other sports. I'm just saying based off of sheer numbers, you know, football teams routinely at the varsity level in a football program, you know, the bigger schools, you may have 200 kids in a football program, you know, and at the smaller schools, maybe they got 40 or 50, you know, from freshman all the way to varsity, which is, you know, more than any other sport is going to have within their program, generally speaking. So there's a lot to be said about how that's going to affect everything. You know, for example, if a kid tests positive and they just played a football game the previous week, does that mean everybody associated with that game has to quarantine for 2 weeks, to include any people in the stand, you know? So there's a lot to be determined and to be figured out about high school sports and where they fit into this realm. And again, high school football makes a lot of money for athletic departments. Doesn't matter whether you like it or not. You could hate football all you want to. It makes a lot of money for athletic departments. You know, makes a ton of money. There's more kids on the team. There's more people in the stands to watch those kids. You know, even if little Johnny is just sitting on the bench, a lot of people's family members come to those games anyways. Then you add the cheerleaders, and then you add the band that plays at halftime. People come just to watch their kids or their cousin or their friend or their nephew or their niece perform at halftime. And then you have, I think, the drill team, you know, those students. So there's a lot of people that go to sports games, whether they have somebody playing or not, and just things that surround and are part of a football game. So, you know, a lot of money to be made. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to keep following this. And, you know, hopefully maybe by next week, you know, I'll have a good idea of what I think they should do, because I think when schools are starting to go back now in terms of athletics, we'll kind of get a better idea of how things are going to flesh out. And really with football, different states have different dates on when you could start having contact, but that will be the key. That will be the biggest determinant, even though you probably can't wait that long. But that's going to be an important time frame, is when those kids start making contact day in, day out, and how you deal with the potential outbreak then. And it's not now at the professional level, I think they should go back. And that's simply because at the professional level, they have the money. They can isolate people as far as, you know, the NFL, MLB, all, you know, these different entities. Well, not MLB, MLS, excuse me, putting their players into a bubble and being able to test players every day and all that. That's not happening at the high school level. They don't have those kind of funds. That would be a perfect situation, but, you know, it's not happening at the high school level. So we'll see what happens with that. But interestingly enough, as we kind of trickle on down from the NFL or from professional sports to youth sports, believe it or not, folks, youth sports has been going on. I'm not sure about football. It seems like football is kind of the one thing everywhere that has kind of been put on hold. I think there may be some 7-on-7 going in certain states, but I don't even think that's going on. But believe it or not, there's youth baseball, which I'm assuming volleyball is going on too. I know there's volleyball tournaments. There's softball being played, baseball being played. And of course, I think I already said basketball. And I know you think, well, you were just saying, you know, there's a there's a potential that colleges, excuse me, not college. Well, yeah, I did say college, but the high school level, that they may not be able to play because of the coronavirus. But how are they doing it? They do sports. The same thing that dominates a lot of decisions that are made in the United States. It comes down to money. Not how they're doing it, but why they're doing it. It's two things, money and recruiting. Money and recruiting, right? Money being that these people that put on tournaments, and I'm not knocking them, I'm not saying that they're wrong or anything like that. I'm just telling you, there's people who put on tournaments now, nowadays, and that's how they make their living. Again, I'm not knocking anybody. I'm just telling you, I'm just providing you information as to what's going on out here in the world. It's people that, you know, they pay their bills, take care of their families, feed themselves based off of these tournaments. And so they're going to have the tournaments. Now, on the reverse side of that, there are people who want to play in these tournaments. You know, they're not doing anything wrong, but there are people at every age level, you would be surprised, maybe, or you may not be. There's people at every age level who are wanting to get their, and I'm talking basketball in particular, that are wanting to get their kids back onto the court to play, regardless of whether you agree with it or not. And it's interesting because, you know, I may have mentioned this on this podcast before, or maybe it was on another podcast I was on, but my brain just completely froze. Totally forgot what I was going to say. But I'll go back to another point I was going to make. So my wife and I were talking. One of our kids is a pretty good basketball player, and I like to use personal stories. And she said, so he was going to play. He was going to play basketball this summer. And, you know, we had him all lined up with a team and everything. And eventually we just decided, you know, nah, you know, it's not really worth it. And then the tournaments, you know, this was before they were allowed to have tournaments and stuff like that, or leagues of any kind in the state we lived in. And then when it got closer, we ended up saying no. We thought we were okay, but then we decided no. And then tournaments started happening. There was a tournament here recently over this past weekend. Last weekend, I think they had like 200 girls teams, something like that. Some ridiculous amount, not ridiculous in a negative way, just, you know, a large amount of teams. Playing up here, and I think there's another fairly decent size tournament happening there this weekend. There's tournaments all over the place up here. But we were talking about just our son in particular. You know, would there be a difference if he were older? And I said, And I thought about it, you know, we were just talking, and I just gave him my thought. I said, you know what? He's the one that just turned 12. I said, at the age of 12, it's not that important. I remember my other point that I was going to talk about, and I'm going to get back to it, where my brain froze. I said, at the age of 12, it's not that important. There's nothing he's really playing for or doing at the age of 12 that, I don't want to say that it's going to ultimately matter, but it's really not that big of a deal. Like, college coaches are not searching for 12-year-olds. And even if they are, it's not, my son is not like, he's not like 6'8 as 12-year-old and just out here scoring 70 points. So he is not the 12-year-old that they're going to offer a scholarship to. And I love my son to death. I'm just being honest. Right. So, in that terms, there's nothing but, I mean, he can have fun, you know. Oh, I can get to go play with my friends. Yeah, that's cool. You can have fun, but we got a basketball go in the backyard. You can go play basketball in the backyard. You know, we have access to a gym. We have the keys to a gym. We can go shoot anytime we want to, any time of the day, you know. So he can still go play basketball if he wanted to. But the risk versus the reward, there's not really much reward outside of him just being able to play basketball. And obviously, I think we all know the risk. Now, we fast forward to it. You say, well, what if he was a sophomore or going into his sophomore year? And I said, then it may be a little bit, you know, I would probably lean more towards, okay, it'd be okay to play. And I say that because the reward potential is you have the opportunity to have tape and for those things for college coaches to be able to get that tape and be able to offer you. There's a guy in this area up here. who's been playing, and over the last, I would say like 10 days, he's probably gotten like 3 or 4 offers from colleges, probably largely based on what he's been able to do in some of these tournaments that they've been having up here. So I think the risk reward is something you got to consider. And as kids get older, you know, the potential reward and that window that college coaches can see them in shrinks. You know, so I understand why people are doing it. And when I was going back to when I was talking about the money that some people are making off of youth sports in terms of holding tournaments, conversely, there's people out there who want their kids to be, who think that, you know, they need to have their kids out there for recruiting purposes. And I just gave you an example of it. You know, if my kids are going into his or her junior year or senior year, maybe even going into their sophomore year, you know, I would definitely be more inclined to let my son or my daughter play. And hell, you'd be surprised how many people that have kids that are in elementary school, and I'm talking fourth, fifth, sixth grade. I know sixth grade in middle school, some places think that their kids need to be playing because they're thinking in terms of scholarships for them when they get older. You'd be surprised. So yeah, youth tournaments are happening because people want them, regardless of whether, you know, what you think. People want their kids to play, and it could be because they want them to have the opportunity to get better. It could be they think this is, you know, they need this film to be able to send the coaches for whatever reason, or just wanting to get them out of the house. There are people who are having their kids play, but just for me and my house, you know, we just decided that's not what we want to do. My oldest son plays football. He's probably not going to play football this year. Again, I'm not knocking anybody that wants to do it, but I'm just telling you, like, at the, my son's 13. He's going to the eighth grade. At this time, it doesn't seem like the risk is there. I mean, the risk reward is there. You know, you hear the experts talking about there's got to be all this control in place and all that for at the professional level to keep the virus from spreading. You know, and those guys are conservative. I mean, hell, some of y'all got teenage boys. You know how kids are in terms of, yeah, you know how kids are. We ain't got to go into all that, but you know how kids are in terms of certain things and not being as careful when it comes to washing their hands and just taking things as seriously as adults would. Because the average adult will, because they don't understand and it doesn't register them, and they probably just don't care. Not in a negative way, but you know, they're kids. We were the same way. I know I was probably the same way when I was a kid. I would just want to be going to do my thing right now. If I was 13 years old, I just would be wanting to go to the gym. I would be like, man, I don't care about no coronavirus. I would probably be saying coronavirus don't come to the hood like an idiot. Ain't no coronavirus coming to no hood, and just be wanting to go to the gym or whatnot. But it's interesting, though, you know, the coronavirus is really dominating the sports, even though we're starting to see people get back. Beware, though, parents out there, understand that, you know, that there's a pretty good chance that there's positive tests that are going to happen. And it just is what it is. And hopefully, especially at the high school level and even at the youth level, hopefully, you know, the coronavirus doesn't have too big of an impact on fall sports getting back in, and we can get through all this, and hopefully by the springtime or by the winter season, you know what I'm saying, we can get back to smooth sailing. Anyways, I think I'm gonna wrap it up right there. Let me check my notes. I don't really got nothing else I want to talk about today. Thank y'all for tuning in. Make sure you tell a friend. You can find us on Spotify, Let's Talk Sports, the Apple Podcast app, Stitcher, the Google Podcast app. So go check it out, subscribe, like it. Yeah, you can even go and leave me a voicemail and I might play it on here one day. Thank y'all for tuning in. Peace.